Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma could understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
So glad that you've allowed us to join you with the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, back in the saddle again. Mr. Gary Baker is out, but Ed Riddell and Cal Carson are with me, along with a couple of very learned folks. We're going to be talking about the new Windows 8 operating system and some of the devices that are out that were launched this week. Cal will also be talking extensively about the iPad Mini, which is going to have a very big impact on their bottom line, and lots of other stuff, including the fact that I didn't spill anything on any devices when I was gone. And once again, it's Foster Brown, and I am delighted to be back here. Although I have to say to my partners, Ed Riddell and Cal Carson, that it sounded like you got along very well without me the last week when I wasn't here. You were having a whole lot of fun.
Well, you know, we had to fly by the seat of our pants without our conductor, you know.
You do very well, then, on your own, playing by ear.
It came out well.
It did, you rascals.
I really don't think... Perhaps maybe it's because that you don't remember all the way back to the days of elementary school when the regular teacher is away. It's all fair game, baby.
It is, and I heard that when you were here. As a matter of fact, a frequent mentions about my spilling things on
so devices. And you went back, and no accidents this time.
No accidents this time. My only challenges that I had were when I'm testing out this Windows Phone 7 device, Nokia 900, right. And hopefully I mean I'm on the list for the Windows Phone 8 version of the Nokia 920 coming out. I'm very anxious to see the differences, and I've been trying over the last month to see just how this thing works, and I've kind of been working with the Windows 8. Some of that GUI, that graphic user interface, the tiles, right. With the phone here. So I was just trying to get used to that. Anyway, the only problem I had was that in using the Nokia drive, now Nokia has got some great software on this thing. A number of pieces of software are great. I got a little fouled up trying to follow things, and my wife will tell you that my language got rather colorful. So I didn't spill anything on it. I did. If the window weren't closed, I might have thrown this out simply because I was so frustrated. But we did manage to make it by. No spills. I was keeping any kind of liquids away from any of the devices.
First of all, we want to clarify a couple of things. Number one, Foster does not spill liquids on devices. What Foster does...
is baptize them.
He does field testing. He's out there in the field. He wants to be able to experience the experience of the device.
That's right.
In a real-world situation.
In a rugged...
Just like any other person would do. And so he takes himself... He takes and forfeits his own dignity and pride.
There should
to
be
throw
music
himself
in the background.
Out
there.
There
should be some sort of classical
It'd be
music.
Great with, like, the Battle Hymn of Republic. You know? But you put yourself out there and you say, look, I'll take the hit for the team, and you actually test these things and make sure they work under all sorts of circumstances.
Oh,
people, I'm telling you, if you have an electronic device and you really want to get some exposure on it, you need to call WJR or one of our affiliates, or just go to InternetAdvisor.net and say, look, we want you to try our device out, and we'll do it for you.
Well, I want to thank you guys for doing a great job and for razzing me. We did get by without destroying any devices, that was good. And Rick Brewer did a great job. I was fascinated to hear about that smart TV that you guys are dealing with last week.
Yes.
You talked about being a stocking stuffer. Wow.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think its release date was November 4th or 5th.
It's very soon.
Coming up, and I'm just like, am I going to
By the end
one of those?
I think we're recording this on October 27th, so that by the end of... next week, I think it'll be coming
out. Let's talk about stocking stuffer. Let's put this in true perspective. Now, here's what the deal is. That device was $50, jam-packed with all sorts of fun and goodies. So what I'll do is I'll spend the $50 if someone will stuff a 60-inch TV in my stocking.
Fair trade.
And that was the, and what was that, the Favi?
Bobby Entertainment. Yeah. Local here, by the way, out of Sterling Heights, Michigan. Yeah.
And you can get all the information on that device and so much more at internetadvisor.net.
It was just like a little, it was Unix on a USB stick. You plug it in to the mini USB port and HDMI port on a TV, and you could stream media
through I noticed
Hulu.
There's like a plug coming out of the thing. Where does that go then?
That's a mini USB, and then it also has an HDMI that plugs in the back of the TV, and then you can use an RF transmitter to remote control it.
It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah, Netflix, anything you want.
And essentially it's putting like an Android system on your TV, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You have Android apps that pop up on the TV.
It's like turning your TV into like a web TV. Plus you can, with the 4 and the 8 gigabyte model, you can store a couple movies on it.
That was really interesting when you said you could store things on it, take it to grandma's house, plug it in and use it. They were saying it works just perfectly that way.
Yeah, she likes The Incredibles too, you know.
Well, folks, you can hear more about that if you go to internetadvisor.net. And then last, this will be the October 20th show, which is last week for us right now. And you'll see the links to Favi Entertainment and Smart TV. And Rick Broida did a great job of getting those people on. And we certainly hope to find out more about it. I hope you guys get some copies of that. Listen, we've got a big program today that we're going to be doing kind of in two parts. First part, we're going to be talking about Windows 8, which launched this past week, and some of the devices that went with it. There was also another big event, Cal, and that was the release of a lot of Apple devices, Apple Mini, that had been talked about for a long time.
Oh, yeah, it was the Mac Mini. You had the new iMac that came out, which is something I really, really want.
A thing of beauty,
And then, of course, this little bitty thing that you talked about, which I think was called the iPad Mini or something like
Colossal
that.
Colossal or something.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about that second hour. But this first hour, I want to introduce a couple of people who were in studio with us again. Jason Lambiris, thank you very much for joining us from Apex Digital. He's the founder and CBO there. Thank you much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and also back with us again, this time without a suit and tie, Justin Coffey.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Good to have you here with us as well. I have down here technical solutions professional, but I think you moved to a new position. Was it a new position you had there?
Well, no, it's still the same title. Basically, I'm kind of in technical sales.
Okay, technical sales as well. Now, the important things, folks, is that these two guys have been very much involved in using Windows 8. So when we talk about Windows 8, the operating system, and then some of the devices that it's working on, you guys work from firsthand. When did you first get yours, Jason?
First started running Windows 8 probably about 4 or 5 months ago.
4 or 5 months ago, and Justin, you've been using it for about...
Yeah, about just over a month now.
About a month, okay. So when we come back, folks, we're going to start talking about this. You may have heard it come out, wonder what it's all about. A lot of negative and positive stuff coming out. We'll cover that all as we continue with the Internet Advisor today here on your favorite radio station, or download it on your favorite podcast from internetadvisor.net. Well, this past week, and that would have been the week of October the 21st, has been, 22nd. Anyway, it's been a very busy one in computing. And a matter of fact, this whole end of October, beginning of November, is being incredibly busy with all of the different brands coming out with new devices and software and things like that. But you might say that for, I don't know if I'm being overly dramatic, but for Microsoft, this last Thursday, October the 26th, was kind of crossing a Rubicon for them in the sense of a very significant step for them, a big, big step, and the sense that it's got to work, and if it doesn't, it's going to create serious problems for this legendary brand.
Well, I think more than anything else, I think it's... Microsoft has really been, if I can just throw this 2 seconds in there, Microsoft has always been that big giant that's sitting over in the corner. It's like the Matterhorn. You know it's there. It's always got that imposing feel and stuff like that. But it's been there for a long, long
30
time.
30-some-odd years, yeah.
I saw a commercial a Microsoft commercial that actually felt young, hip, and fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was really threw me off. And I was like, this is great. They must have.
You're waiting for that piece of fruit to come flying by somewhere in the logo.
Well it almost looked like it was going to be that sort of thing, but it wasn't.
No.
And it's really refreshing to now see that sort of thing happening with Microsoft. And I think if they continue down that path, the resurgence of the giant as it was before will return.
I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of that's dependent upon the OEMs. You know, Dell's, HP's, Lenovo, because Microsoft makes a software product, right?
But haven't they
don't make the hardware.
And but haven't they done the end run around that? I mean, isn't that exactly the point of what they've done?
Hmm. You mean like with the Surface?
Let me bring a couple up because they're itching to make comments, too. I want to just reintroduce Jason Lemberis, who's the founder and CEO of Apex Digital, and Justin Coffey also, who was one of the technical solution professionals there. Jason, your face was like, I want to say something. Go ahead. Feel free to jump into the conversation here.
Earlier in the year, Justin and I had the opportunity to head to Microsoft's World Partner Conference back in July, which took place in Toronto. And some of the things that they shared with all the Microsoft partners there that over the course of their next fiscal year, they are planning on spending more in marketing than they ever have as an organization.
Over $1 billion, I think.
Correct.
It is,
yep. Yeah. So, you know, to start to see some of those commercials come out is it's pretty amazing, and I agree. It's different for them.
But it picked it up to a whole new level. I actually did something I haven't done with a Microsoft commercial in a long time. I actually watched the whole commercial. You know, because normally it's like, oh, yeah, I know what they're going to say, and that's good and stuff like that. But this one was different. And it had a feel. It almost felt like, and I'm not being mean, but it's almost like they said to Steve Ballmer, you know, hey, why don't you go ahead and do that island thing that you've always wanted to do? And they brought somebody else in younger, and they said, we're going to change the face of Microsoft.
Well, and they need to. They've been around for a long time. Yeah. And it's like you said, they're always there. They're always in the background, and they really don't come to the foreground that much. I mean, they're not in people's faces that much because they don't do hardware. I mean, sure, they're running on a majority of the desktops, they run a majority of the servers, you know. Mm-hmm. Linux is catching up on the server end and for the cloud storage, you know. Apple's catching up on their desktops. They really need to do something, and I'm hoping this is it.
Jason and Justin, what do you think of this whole notion of Microsoft stepping out of its normal role of being kind of behind the scenes and under everything that's going on as the operating system, and now they're moving into making things? What do you make of that? I mean, are they challenging their own customer base?
I don't know if they're challenging their own customer base. You know, I think they recognize that one of the things that Apple has done really well, as an example, is they've controlled the entire user experience.
Right.
By controlling the hardware and controlling the software, they've controlled the experience. You know, I think that was one of the things that Microsoft had difficulty with. If you look at the example of Windows Mobile phone. It wasn't necessarily that people didn't like the OS, that maybe didn't like the device itself or the hardware. So I think they're taking a kind of a fresh look at how they can be successful.
But now with the phones, if I'm not wrong, Justin, they're actually letting somebody else do the building, but with the tablets and with the laptops and to some extent with the new desktops, et cetera, they're actually getting into the building themselves, like with the Microsoft Surface RT. Am I right? They're actually doing the manufacturing, or are they handing it off to somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, their partnership with their OEMs is still extremely strong. The Surface is really the first time Microsoft's really doing it all in-house, and the OEM partners were a little shaken up at first, but I think it's still a very strong partnership between the desktop, laptops, Ultrabooks, tablets, and even the Windows phone devices.
Yeah.
Do you think there's actually a Microsoft factory out there somewhere, or are they actually working with like an Acer behind the scenes, or with
Foxconn,
you know, one of the other fabricators?
I would think they would be working with one of those.
Yeah, I don't.
You know. I don't know for sure, but my guess would be the same.
Yeah, somebody else out there who's building for a whole bunch of people is specifically building.
I mean, even the guest we had in last week that had that Favi.
The smart TV.
That's all made over in China. You know, but they engineered it, they designed it, they marketed it, and they relied on the OEMs over there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like the two gentlemen that are in the studio right now. I'm sitting right next to a guy that traditionally, if you said the word Microsoft, I would look over at him and say, okay, fine, what sort of piece of equipment would be in front of him? And that would normally be a laptop computer, and he'd be doing something with Windows. But he has a tablet in front of him right now. It has not a keyboard, at least that I've seen so far, and he's using a stylus.
It is
a different world.
You know, stylus. When you think stylus, you think, boy, that was so 10 years ago.
Palm Pilot.
Right. But now, what are your impressions of the tablet and then going back to the stylus? I mean, because I couldn't imagine using a tablet without one.
you know, it really, for me, my thoughts around the stylus really kind of started probably about 6 years ago when you saw some of the convertible notebooks out, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to get into concepts around the Surface right. and tablet, but really, for me, the best combination, what I've been waiting for, is that accurate combination of a stylus as well as multi-touch interface.
Yeah. So what device are you using there in front of you?
So I've got a Samsung Series 7 Slate. That I'm using here, and it's running Windows 8 Pro, and I've also got it loaded up with the Office 2013 suite.
Okay, and you can use touch on that as well, and do you have like a touch keyboard that comes up on that if you wanted to do that?
Yeah, so there's, you know, essentially when you go to a text field or an area that you need a keyboard, there's a little icon that you can hit that pops up the virtual keyboard, so to speak.
And you can either the stylus or your thumb or whatever fingers you could type like that.
Either or.
Okay. Yep. Which do you use, by the way? Which do you prefer for typing?
You know, it really really depends on what I'm doing. You know, sitting in a meeting or sitting at a conference, you know, when I'm traveling, tend to use the stylus for kind of taking handwritten notes. It's just a little more fluid, you know, when I'm obviously filling out forms, things like that, or typing up documents, mm-hmm. I'll use a keyboard.
Now, Gary has been trying to move himself over to a tablet as well for full-time, as opposed to using a notebook computer with him as well. And he says he's almost there, but there's some things about it that, you know, he still needs the notebook or feels he needs to do with a notebook and that sort of thing. Are you 100% with the Slate, or are you doing this just kind of to get a feel for it?
I would say I'm 50-50, and it really depends on what I'm doing. When I'm traveling, I'm just taking the Slate with me. For a while, I was carrying kind of two devices
just
while I was testing it out, right? Just kind of testing it out. But more often than not, it's just the Slate, you know, because I can do everything I need to on it.
If I recall, one of the problems Gary had was editing documents, PowerPoint presentations, doing project stuff, manipulating within, you know, like project. He found it very difficult, of course, with the iPad.
That has been the key issue with even the iPad and a lot of these other tablets out, is that you really can't do serious production on it. I mean, serious production.
Well, that's
to a certain extent you can, but there's always a lot of compromise.
But that's because, and this is my own opinion, tablets, traditionally, most of them, not all, but most of them were made to be consumable devices.
Exactly.
You're bringing your content to that person.
Right.
They're consuming the content.
Right.
This tablet that he has in front of him is designed for creating content, or at least manipulating the content.
And you're running Windows 8 Pro, which I understand when the Surface Pro 8 comes out, which will be how many months from now? It's supposed to be.
To be honest, it's still coming soon. Honestly, I'm hoping sooner than later. That's the one I'm looking at.
I think everybody who wants to work seriously with a light tablet with this new format they have says, I'm waiting for that one to come out, because the Windows RT right now is more of just a tablet, which is more of a consumer device, but it also has Office on it. Am I right? It runs Office 13?
That is correct.
Right, so it's pretty serious. I want to talk with both you, Justin and Jason, about what your experience was like beginning to use Windows 8, because there's been a lot of commentary about the learning curve involved in that. And we'll get back and do that. Our guest in studio, Jason Lambiris, who's the founder and CEO of Apex Digital, and also with us, Justin Coffey from that company, who's a technical solutions professional, and Eddie Cal and myself, Foster Brown, here in studio. We're going to continue talking about this big week for Microsoft and lots of things coming up in the future. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, and welcome to the folks who are listening to us on our affiliate stations across the Michigan Talk Radio Network. We're delighted to have you with us, and also for those of you who are wise enough to download the podcast from our home page at internetadvisor.net, welcome to you too, and those of you who have subscribed to podcasts. Foster Brown here, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and also with us in studio are Jason Lambiris and Justin Coffey, both of them from Apex Digital. Jason, you're founder and CEO. Oh, tell us just quickly, what is Apex, and what do you folks do there before we go on any further?
So at Apex Digital Solutions, we're a Detroit-based technology firm. Help small, mid-sized businesses with really their servers or networks integration, and at the end of the day, helping get more value for their business through the use of technology.
And you guys have kind of gone all in on Windows. Am I right on that?
We have. We were earlier this year awarded the Microsoft Partner of the Year Award for the Heartland Territory.
Congratulations, yes.
Thank you. And, You know, it's we're very, very familiar with Microsoft's desktop and server technologies as well as a lot of the cloud offerings that they have right now.
Just so I can get a better feel, because you said for businesses and stuff like that, what size business would come and look for your type of services, just to give the audience an idea? You know, is it the mom-and-pop shop, or would it be a larger, like maybe a Fortune 1000 company or something like that?
You know, most of the organizations that we work with tend to range from, it runs a gamut anywhere from 25 employees to 5,000 employees is kind of the range right now.
Okay, good.
Jason, when you guys decided to throw your hat in and get involved in Windows 8, you got hold of copies of the operating system about 6 months ago. You said you really started working with it.
Roughly, yep.
What was the learning curve for you on it? What were some of the challenges you faced as you took it on?
Well, I tell you, the learning curve was a little different based on what device I was using. I first loaded it up as just a virtual machine on a laptop that I had.
Okay.
And I think that's been predominantly a lot of people's experience.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 3 months ago, I managed to pick up the device that I have in front of me here, which is the Samsung Series 7 Slate, a touch device.
And that's about a 11-inch screen?
Roughly, yep, about 10, 11 inches.
Yeah, so it's a smaller device, but it's definitely in the realm of the Galaxy, I'm trying to think of what the devices are out now, the HD, the Kindle? Would it be like that? I'm sorry.
It'd be more like maybe the BlackBerry Playbook in that class of machine.
But anyway, folks, it's kind of sizable, but it's also very portable and not ultra-thin, but nice. Okay, so as you're using the operating system on that, did you have a trouble going from using a mouse to touch or trying to use the operating system with a mouse?
It wasn't so much from mouse to touch, and I think this is one of the big things that everybody's getting hung up on. Everybody's looking for the start button down in that lower left-hand corner, right? Mm-hmm. And we've been trained to do that for a couple decades, really,
yes, exactly.
At this point.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are upset that that's missing. And the thing to just remember, honestly, don't look for the start button anymore. Everybody's pretty familiar with that Windows key, whether it's on their keyboard or you find them now on the device, usually bottom center.
Right.
And that's going to get you back to that start screen.
For instance, if you use an iPhone, it's kind of like that little center button.
It's exactly.
Or an Android device, am I right? On the bottom of the Android devices, that's the home key?
That's a great analogy. I like that.
Yeah, really, it's like that. As I was watching a little video today, by the way, we linked to that on our homepage on one of the news items that I had there. If you want to see a great video, it's the Windows 8 Surface RT review. There's links to a CNET video that was a wonderful one. But it hit me for the first time as I was watching it. That's where it is. And it's just like my phone. I simply go to that little logo and click on it, and boom, I'm back again to home base.
And you won't have to pay Rolling Stones all those millions of dollars they used to start me up.
Which was the tune that they used, right?
Yes,
exactly,
yes,
when they first launched
it. Great, so now it's Take Me Home, Country Road.
that's about it. So again, for you, were there any other things that were hurdles that you had to go over in order to get feeling comfortable using Windows 8?
You know, it was just kind of figuring out where things are located at, right? So, again, that start menu goes away. It goes back to that home screen in the tiles, essentially. And it's just getting comfortable with that. After a couple of days of use, frankly, it's much more intuitive.
Yeah. You know, I had a question. Okay, you have a tablet now. I want to print. Okay. Most printers now that you buy, even the $50 ones, come network ready. How was that setting up for printing?
The same as you have on any other device. I mean, the thing to bear in mind, it's the full-blown operating system of Windows.
Excellent. Excellent. So it came standard with a bunch of manufacturer drivers, and it just like Windows 7, it goes out and checks. If it doesn't have the driver, it goes to the Microsoft website and searches for...
Looks for the updates.
Does a Win update.
Yep.
Excellent.
Exactly. Well, Justin, let me bring you into this, because you've been using a little less the operating system. So what were some of the challenges for you? You've got it on a laptop there, right?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to be using it in more of what most people are going to be kind of using it at first, since most people aren't just going to go out and buy it. They're just going to upgrade to it, or they're going to have that traditional laptop desktop. Mm-hmm. At first, you know, it's different. Not having the start button, it's something that you're just so... You grow up using it, and then when it's gone, it's how do I use it? But like Jason was saying, once you get used to the fact that the start button's gone, and now you have a start screen, and you can customize it, put things where you want, it makes using Windows a lot easier. And to be honest, once you really look at what it looks like, it's a lot more fun. You really can put, you know, your mail, people, tasks,
you can
weather.
Get those tiles arranged. And I know that from using a Windows phone now.
Exactly.
You can arrange those tiles to be most convenient for you.
Exactly.
Right in the middle of the screen.
So it makes it quicker, more easier to use, and, you know, not to steal, you know, an Apple word, but it's more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft actually made a beautiful OS with this one.
That, it's funny. That is a word, guys, I'm hearing continually about
what,
the
beautiful?
Look. That it's beautiful. That it really is a very elegant, colorful look.
And you know one of the reasons why? You don't have all those desktop document icons scattered all over your desktop. Remember Windows?
That's
I can't tell you how many people that I work on with. I mean, sure, they got to customize their background. Desktop background, but it's cluttered with other documents because they just love.
You guys were talking about
documents.
That last week,
yes.
About desktops that are
and
cluttered.
Yes,
I went home and I cleared off my desktop because of that. But
so, how is document management on Windows 8? How have you found that?
Well, I'm using SkyDrive. I think it's awesome how it just integrates directly into Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft
SkyDrive is the cloud-based
exactly.
Storage for the Windows operating systems now. Period.
Exactly. The best way to look at it is it's Dropbox for Windows.
Okay.
It's awesome to use. You can go to the Internet Explorer, or, you know, you can use any browser to go navigate it from someone else's computer. But on your own device, it's just simply drag and drop, so you can have your documents anywhere. But just kind of having the multi or having it under your favorites library, it just makes it easy to just put things where you need them and easy to access.
Now, I understand one of the keys to learning how to navigate here, and Calvin, Field, jump in with yours. One of the keys is also that going to the sides and the top and bottom is where you'd have a lot of functions. So, like, to the right is where you get these charms, and mm-hmm. the charms will be like what?
The charms are essentially your settings. If you want to search across the device, if you want to go back to the start menu.
If I wanted to
like
print, would that be where I went?
Printing is there
okay,
as well.
Okay, so those functions that you were talking about would be on that right-hand side.
Or hooking up to a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Okay, that's all on the right-hand side. Go ahead.
Traditionally, I use things like SkyDrive and Dropbox and stuff like that for storing, you know, small documents, little things that I want to move around, that sort of thing, nothing massive. When it comes to backing up these rascals, is Windows 8 like integrated to work with things like CrashPlan, Mozy, Carbonite, all those different types of backup scenarios? Or how about as far as backing up to external devices, you know, hard drives and that sort of thing? How does that work?
You could still back up to external devices, and really as far as things like Mozy, you know, they run on the, you know, Windows 7 and previous operating systems. Mm-hmm. I haven't tested it myself. Mm-hmm. I assume it's the same experience. You install the software. It's an agent-based backup, and it's really just going to push it out to your storage.
So for some of the names, folks, that were just mentioned right now are these cloud-based backup systems, where Carbonite, Mozy, and some of these other ones that you...
The difference being is that SkyDrive, you can store stuff up there. You can probably back up a bunch of stuff up there if you're willing to buy additional space and that sort of thing. But those other services that I mentioned are specifically for doing large-scale backups, which is a little bit different than just you know, storing some documents or pictures for sharing and that sort of type.
Guys, I want to run this by you. My sense, people have complained, you know, Windows 8 isn't the same on the phone and on the Windows RT and on the Windows Surface Pro, and you know, they're doing a lot of kvetching, as they say, about that. My sense is that the real key here is this new look, this new GUI, graphic user interface. I find it on my Windows phone. It is that whole tile experience that's here when I go to my homepage, that I've got these live tiles here. I'll find those same live tiles, am I right, on the Windows RT, and I'll find it on the Windows Surface Pro, am I right? So that's the commonality. And does that sound right to you?
It does. I mean, and that's the beauty of it. It's the same experience that you get, whether it's on a slate, whether it's on your laptop or the phone, as you'd mentioned. You know, you mentioned live tiles, and that's one thing that, you know, I really love about the operating system.
I love it about the phone.
It's not just a bunch of icons. It's actually giving you tidbits of information of what's going on in your world.
Exactly. And what I love about that is with the Windows Phone is I can dive through that little wormhole there, and I get into, like with my People Hub, I can go to Facebook things. I can go to Twitters. I can send a message. I can go call somebody, all by entering that one window into the operating
system.
Right,
and it's a live window that can give you a little glimmer that, hey, something's going on here. When we come back, I want to talk about the live store, or, you know, the app store.
Yes, let's talk about that. And I also want to bring in, you mentioned Office 365 and the Office 2013, all the rest of those things. Try to sort through some of that stuff as well. Lots to talk about here, folks, on the Internet Advisor. I know we're just scratching the surface, but thank you for joining us as we continue to dig into this brand new world for Windows. Thank you for joining us for this first hour of our program today. We're talking about Windows 8 and the whole huge shift for Windows, Microsoft, period, with their operating systems and tremendous amount of devices that have been shown. With us in studio helping us understand this, the experience of the change and some of the things that are going on are people who are actually there to help companies to make this kind of a shift. And with us is Jason Lambiris, who's the founder and CEO of Apex Digital, and with him, one of his colleagues, Justin Coffey. Guys, thanks very much again for being with us. Ed, you had a question about the App Store.
Yes. You know, one of the things that made the iPhone and iPad devices so successful was this, the ability to do impulse purchasing of applications. I want to buy a 99-cent application. And so 99 cents, I can live with that. And it's cool. It'll keep me occupied while I'm in the waiting room with two kids screaming, or give it to the kids when they're in the back seat. And I'm excited to see what Microsoft, how they're going to take advantage of that. And I understand that they have an app store. And
this just opened, well, recently opened.
Yeah, it's probably going to recently open up. Now, I don't expect it to be very large, because even when Apple, you know, first released theirs, theirs wasn't that large. And it's something that has to grow, and it's going to require the developers out there and developers of all types to participate. And I'm sure there's a bunch of companies out there.
So, Jason and Justin, when you went on to Windows 8, did you experience that kind of, oh, darn, I can't get this app or that app that I normally would use?
I definitely did. I mean, there was a, you know, during the beta trials and things like that, weren't a lot of apps out there, but you're starting to really see them accelerate in numbers. Where I missed them the most was on my phone.
That's exactly what I experienced with the Windows Phone. That, and matter of fact, there were things on here, like, for instance, Audible. We were traveling. We listened to Audible books on tape an awful lot. This Audible app is horrible.
On the Nokia.
Absolutely, on the Nokia. And when I use it, matter of fact, sometimes I was having to go back to my iPhone and just to use it to play the Audible, because it would keep my place, for instance. But on the other thing, for instance, like Evernote works wonderfully on
here. Now, how about Pandora?
Pandora isn't there.
Yeah, but what about the most important app of all?
Which?
They have Angry Birds on there?
I just checked. It's there.
Yeah. And you know what? And that is the
Fruit Ninja 2.
Those are two my granddaughter installed on my iPhone. So you're talking about that.
You got to have those to survive with children, I'm telling you.
I mean, as people that were rolling out devices like this, the iPads and iPhones, or, you know, people flirted with the touchpad, the first thing they did was they wanted to download one of these apps, and it was Angry Birds or, you know, Flying Fruit.
Right, exactly, the Fruit Ninja. How can you guys explain to me, because one of the keys here is to get people on board with this, and you are dealing with companies that are going to be looking at that. Can you explain why Microsoft, number one, was so secretive about everything, and when the launch date came around, didn't look like there was much to be kept secret because it had already been out there? Why didn't they release the SDKs, the software developer kits, much earlier on to many more people? Is there any idea why they did that? I don't want to hold you responsible for Microsoft.
Well,
but
they can only speculate, right?
Well, one of the messages that, you know, honestly, Steve Ballmer kind of relayed to everybody at World Partner Conference earlier this year was that Microsoft is going to start being a little more secretive about what they have going on. You know, it's not that they necessarily didn't release the SDKs. You know, they tend to work with select partners of theirs, a really kind of early onboarding programs, things that are under non-disclosure agreements to make sure they've got it down. They've got it down solid before they come out.
Are you seeing them picking up, though, the apps picking up? Are you seeing the ones that you're looking for, like a favorite app of yours that's suddenly appearing there now?
I am. You know, I was carrying around an Apple iPhone. Still have it, still carry that along with Lumia 900, and I've been waiting for of my apps, right, to come out.
Strap them together.
took a little while. Bank of America finally got theirs. You know, I'm kind of waiting on...
I hadn't even tried it. That's right. I should look for that. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, everybody has their favorite apps, but I think that's key for you being able to, you know, if somebody wants to move to another device.
Simply absolutely is.
Yeah, and what I'm looking for in the business environment, I mean, you got fun apps, but I'm looking for applications that... You know, the light bulb goes off. Like, this is such a great productivity tool that I could use in my work environment on a daily basis, where I'm carrying around a tablet and I could use that camera to scan those barcodes and throw it in a spreadsheet so I don't have to write those numbers down. Mm. Someone's going to write a 99-cent app for me to do that.
Yeah. And that's where you get that crowd effect of getting developers on board to do that. I've got to ask you guys to help us now, if you can, to sort through the whole thing about Office. Because, frankly, it's getting a little confusing. Because it's like there's Office 2013 and you're seeing email coming from Microsoft says, come on, try a free trial of this. Then you've got Office 365, which is a subscription service. And you've got Outlook now, which was the old Hotmail, which itself seems to have some of the applications, for instance, right up there along with SkyDrive. So can you help sort this out for us? What's what and how do they work with one another?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the biggest shifts other than Windows 8 that's going to affect individuals and companies worldwide is that Microsoft's revamping what Office is, and they're doing that kind of in conjunction with what's called Office 365. Office 365 has been around for probably just over a year and a couple months now, and it was really business-oriented. Microsoft's kind of switched that now where it's basically the complete umbrella for consumers, small businesses.
There's a home premium version of it, I think.
Exactly. Home premium's one of them. Small business premium's another one.
Right.
We'll use Office 365 Home Premium right now. Basically, Microsoft describes it as a single subscription to Office for the entire household. A lot of people had issues saying, I don't want to spend $150 per license, per PC, run it. You know, that's extremely expensive, especially with schools pushing it, businesses pushing it, even doing, you know, household tasks using Office. So what they decide to do is release, you know, with Home Premium, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook, pretty much the entire suite that most people use, and decided you can install it up to five PCs or Macs and share them between your family or your small business.
Okay, so that, for instance, I have an Office 365 subscription to, what's the P1? That's the small business one, I think, isn't it? Okay, so does that give me five licenses that I can go to five machines and install it?
Not yet, and that's this is where it's getting a little confusing for people out there. You know, outside of the Microsoft ecosystem, you know, you're hearing phrases that, you know, mean one thing one day and another the next.
Yes.
We're in that transitional period right now. So moving forward in early 2013, this is where you're really going to have the consistency. So one of those things you just mentioned, SkyDrive. SkyDrive is going to be huge with the Office 365 Home Premium. Right now, anyone can go get a SkyDrive account with a Microsoft account and get 7 gigs of storage. If you have that Office 365 Home Premium account, you'll be able to have 27 gigs included in, which is a lot of space.
Now, I know, for instance, with the subscription that I have, it's $6 a month. That's like a small business subscription, and which isn't much. I mean, the $6, I've got access to all this stuff, all the web-based stuff, plus the SkyDrive and everything else. So what is it going to be for, let's say, for the homeowner, let's say, for the regular person who's getting Office that way?
Microsoft's still yet to determine what that final price is going to be. It's a big shift for them because usually it's go to Best Buy or go online and pick up, you know, a hard copy. Now it's a subscription model.
Does that include downloading something that I can work offline on my computer with?
Exactly.
I'll have Word and all the rest of that stuff on my computer.
Exactly. You're not limited to having internet connectivity.
Okay,
now, the internet's going to, obviously, with SkyDrive, it's going to help keep that stuff in synchronization, but if you're, you know, on a plane or if you're traveling, you'll be able to access those Word documents.
I want to make sure I'm understanding something because I heard something shoot by while I was fascinated by this tablet. You said something about a license where you can put it on three Windows machines and two Macs.
Yeah, that's when I say up to five devices,
yes,
it's Windows and or Mac.
Okay, now, Microsoft Access, it runs on Windows. It won't run on the Mac, correct? So what I'm going to be doing is I'm getting 2013 either for Windows or 2013 for the Mac. Is that correct?
Correct. It's based on which OS, which offerings you're going to get.
Okay, thank you very much.
We haven't even begun to get through everything here, but I want to thank you guys for coming in today and kind of scratching the surface with us. Thank you so much, Jason Liberis, for being here, and Justin as well. Can we keep in touch with you guys as things continue to develop here?
Absolutely.
I know, especially in the month of November, we're going to be back again with Dave Sawyers coming in from Microsoft, and we're going to have a lot of toys in here to play with. But I'm also interested because next month the Windows Phone 8 comes out as well. So we're going to keep in touch with you guys then, okay?
Very good.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back after the top of the hour here, we're going to talk about the big things that have been happening in the Apple world and in some of the other things that questions people have posed to us at home. A bunch of other things come up here in the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Always something interesting, so stick around. And remember, our home base is internetadvisor.net. You have just been listening to our number one of the Internet Advisor, a podcast where you'll find the latest news on all things digital and advice to make your Internet experience a great one. Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown with you, along with my companions Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. And this hour number two is going to be, we're going to be taking a little stroll through some of the big events that happened this past week. One of them being Apple and a brand new device that they released, along with a number of other things we're going to be talking about, and maybe even answering some questions that you folks have sent in as well. It's going to be a good hour. Stick around. We'll be here for you on the Internet Advisor. Thank you for joining us here on hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson from our posse. Gary is off this week. I will have to talk to him, however, about the number of times he talked about my spilling things on devices. Although I have to say I've given him some cause for saying that. Welcome back. Cal, we wanted you in this segment to do a little talking about Apple event that came up this past week. I have to say this. Now, I know that some people will be hearing this after we record this right now, but I just saw a fascinating headline as one of our guests in studio here, Justin Coffey, and I were talking about applications, news applications. I pulled up Flipboard on my iPhone, which is a wonderful news device. Unfortunately, it's not there for the Windows phone yet, but I just saw this headline. Hurricane Sandy forces Google to cancel an Android event, a big event that was coming up for the week of October the 29th, the very last one. They were going to be putting out, it was rumored to be revolving around the launch of the Android 4.2, the latest, which was Key Lime Pie.
What dessert is this? Inch,
and a 10-inch Nexus, their most recent Nexus product, Nexus 10. Anyway, what I thought's interesting for our listeners here is that, well, by the time people get to this, we'll see if this hurricane is causing such a big impact on the East Coast that they're even canceling a huge event for Google.
So it's like it's like when it snows in Texas, right?
Yeah, this is going to be. Yeah,
I mean, is it really going to be that big of an event?
Apparently, it is. It's going
to
be.
I'll probably have to eat my words.
Huge event. I hope it isn't for the sake of all the people who are right now battening down on the East Coast, and we have some dear friends who lived out there. So I really hope it isn't. But I just saw that and thought of the events that happened this last week with Microsoft and Apple that you're going to be talking about. And Google was going to have a huge event this coming week, but apparently it looks like that superstorm may be putting the clamps down on it. So the big event happened with Apple.
What big event?
What big event?
There was no big event.
Yeah. Well, apparently there wasn't.
It was very quiet in the news, wasn't it? Well, yeah. This past event, past week, Apple announced a new product line, and it's kind of be expected because, you know, the holiday season's coming, and my God, we don't want to have that money sitting in people's pockets doing nothing. Apple said, hey, look, we'll take it on. We'll take your money, please. It's an encumbrance, but, you know, what the heck. But basically, they announced a couple of things in the product line. One of the things they announced was the Mac Mini, which hadn't been refreshed for the longest time. So they've came out with a new, faster. And
the Mac Mini, for folks out there, is that
$500?
$500, is it?
Yeah, we call it the faceless, touchless, handless PC. Because basically what you're buying is just a CPU. It's a little bitty box, about half the size of a shoebox and about one-third as high. Mm-hmm. And you basically put your own keyboard on it, you put your own mouse on it, put your own
It would be like buying a desktop, if people would understand, runs of PCs without anything else.
Exactly.
There's no monitor, there's no nothing.
But it's about the size of a truffle box that you would get from Godiva Chocolate.
Yeah. Or in your case, two boxes of Pop-Tarts stacked side by side.
Exactly. Those are the frosted ones because I don't like the plain ones. So they announced a new one for that. They finally refreshed that, and that was really good to hear and that sort of thing. They also announced a new iMac, and oh, my God. See, I'm kind of an iMac person, okay? I've got a 24-inch at home, and I thought it was the cat's meow when I got it because it's stainless. It's an aluminum frame, and it's beautiful, and I really do love it.
They're gorgeous machines, period, yeah.
They decided to make it even thinner.
I know.
So they went with the same sort of logic that they did with the MacBooks, and now this thing is like it's thin. It's really thin. Most of it because they took the optical drive out of it, so you no longer have that inside the machine. But you can attach a USB version 1 of it right to it, and it'll work just as well. But the display on the 27-inch is absolutely gorgeous.
I saw a headline. I wonder if you agree with this. It's going to be the new reception computer in offices.
Oh, product placement is going to be absolutely crazy with this. I think between this new iMac for desktops in offices, in movies and TV and stuff like that, that's going to be the standard.
That's exactly.
And
what
I think that Surface is probably going to become one of the new standard product placements that you're going to see as well.
Now, is it a touchscreen?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Yeah. And so what they did, though, is when they did a new technique with this, and they laminated the screen on the inside of the glass.
Yes, I saw that. So it's incredibly thin and no glare, right? Reduce the glare, 75%.
It reduces the glare, and it also gives you a wider viewing angle, so it looks just as crisp and clean at 178 degrees as it does at zero. So it looks really, really beautiful.
That's interesting.
So they came out with that, and that's a really nice thing. They also upped the memory capacity on it to 32 gigabytes, which is just beautiful. That's the, you know, more memory, you can't have too much.
I assume it comes with a solid-state drive.
No,
yes, it
optical
does.
Drive.
Like no optical drive comes with a solid-state drive. You can get up to as big as a 768, I think.
I thought the standard was a half a terabyte or 512.
Yeah, yeah. It's screamingly fast. It's just a beautiful machine. Enough about that. And then they announced something else. Let me see what it was. Oh, it's something called an iPad Mini. Now, this little rascal is... here's the funny paradox. The Nexus Pad came out with their 10-inch, so they're going from a 7 to a 10, and Apple's going from basically a 10 to a 7, which is that sort of thing. So it's roughly 7 inches across. It's a little bit bigger than the Kindles or the Nooks,
mm-hmm.
but it's only about as thin as a pencil.
Now, are they going to provide, can you get a Nook application and can you get a Kindle application from the iStore, iTunes Store?
What you can do that's really great about the new iPad is that everything you can run on a full-size iPad, you can run on an iPad Mini.
Yeah, because you know this is targeted after the Nook and the Kindle device.
Well, let's talk some more about that when we come back.
And there were a couple other things that came out as well. So we'll be talking about some of the big Apple events of this past week with Cal Carson here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. And today we're doing things a little bit different today. We have, because of all the things that have been launched, I should mention we have some guys in studio who are going to stick around. We're going to talk a little bit more about Windows as well. Jason Lambiris, who's the founder and CEO of Apex Digital, and Justin Coffey, his colleague, a technical solution professional, are here with us as well. And we were talking in the first hour with them about Windows. But, Cal, I want to get back to you and talk about the big event that happened this last week as well, with Apple releasing a whole bunch of new products. Probably the biggest one in terms of a publicity that drew everybody's attention was they're coming out with the iPad Mini, which is essentially a 7.9-inch screen, am I right?
Correct.
Yeah, and that it was essentially the machine that, or the device that Steve Jobs said he would never do.
Well, he said he wouldn't do it because at the time that he said that, when that 7-inch came out, when that size of 7-inch came up. At that time, there were only two devices that were that size at that time, and both of them were very poor at their execution. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, this is just not the place or the space for us to be in. Matter of fact, we don't want to be that space.
Yeah.
Now, that's half the reason why when they brought out this size, this thing does everything that the large size does. So it's not a watered-down, scaled-down version. A 7-inch iPad does everything that the 9-inch iPad does.
Right.
So it's a full-featured.
And then I guess part of the logo, the advertising campaign, wasn't it? It's all that, but last or something like that.
Yeah. And here's another crazy stat that you might want to know. That when they announced pre-sales for the iPad Mini, the white version was completely sold out in 17 minutes.
Wow.
How many is that? Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know the exact number. But in 17 minutes, they were all sold out, gone.
Now, I have a question I'm going to throw out to the whole group here. Jason, Justin, joined in. Ed, please. How competitive do you think the iPad Mini will be in a field that is already populated by a lot of very popular Android tablets, Barnes & Noble has got their Nook out there. Everybody else has got a device out there. How successful do you think they're going
to
be in that?
Before you, I was waiting for you to ask this question. Because here's what's my thinking in it. They priced it at $329 for
yes.
the lowest price one.
Right.
And I think they're going to be very, very competitive even at $329. I think that if they would have priced it at $250, they would have literally crushed the market.
Mm.
Because everybody wants one.
Mm.
Even people who get the other ones mm-hmm. really do want an iPad. It's either the price or they just, well, you know, I'm anti-Apple, that sort of thing. Mm. But they really want that device, but they just don't want to go that far in the money. They like the $199 price, which is attractive to everybody. I wish iPads were $199 too. I'd buy two. But
I couldn't buy one.
But if they would have dropped it to $250, I think they would have literally crushed the market.
I'm curious now. Jason, what's your thoughts on this? Because you're coming from now the field where Windows is coming out with a device that's going to be in that range, a little bit bigger. But, I mean, it's going to be very portable.
You know, I think it's a different type of device, right? You know, it's more of a consumer-based device. Not that, not that there aren't being, you know, predictions that are stating that's going to start to change, or at least Apple and Google are going to be forced to change that. But, you know, smaller size, I think it's perfect if you have to purchase multiple devices, especially at the lower price point, say for a family, right? You got a few kids and everybody's fighting over that one device, a little more portable. So I think it's going to probably do well.
What do you think? What do you think, Ed? There's a lot of competitors out there.
Yeah, I know. I think at the $329 price, I think they're gonna make a huge dent. You got a lot of people out there that always wanted one, and that extra $150 just might be the breaking point. I think it's gonna be a number one shopping on this year's Christmas list.
Question is, what are you getting? What are you getting that's special about, except something that's the kind of an iPad, but not quite?
The point. No, it is an iPad. It is an iPad. And it's not necessarily that there's something special about it other than it's small. After that, it's just an iPad. And there are people out there that would put their hands up and say, hey, I'd buy the original iPad, the first model, one without cameras and everything,
yes.
because they think the device is really that neat.
Yeah. So all the people that are upgrading, I'm looking on Craigslist now, and there are dozens of people now that have ordered their new devices and have put their old ones up on Craigslist.
Yeah, this is a great time for getting one of those older devices that you might think is, hey, that's pretty good, I'll get one of those. My question, I guess, is you've got a lot of very capable Android devices that are out there. In particular, was it the Nexus ones that are out there?
I think the problem with Androids is just that each manufacturer spins it up a little different. There's not the consistency with Android that you get with Apple. Apple devices are all the same. Every iPad, every iPod Touch, every iPhone, it's all the same OS. Everything looks and feels the same. With Androids, every manufacturer or every partner spins up the graphical user interface a little bit different.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Microsoft did what they did, is possibly coming out with their own product, because they wanted to control that. Because when you would get a Microsoft phone, and I loved the older Microsoft phones, the 6s, the 7s, mm-hmm. even the 5s I enjoyed, because with the syncing with my enterprise environment, every manufacturer from Sprint, Verizon, AT&T put their own
spin.
Stuff
the
on
skin
top
on.
Of
They're
it,
about skin
their own skin
yeah.
and
yeah.
stuff and bloatware that I really didn't want on there. Mm-hmm. I wanted a true Microsoft phone so that I could upgrade it, and that I would be locked out from that by the carriers. And every phone was different.
And the other thing,
go ahead.
And the other thing, it doesn't have the cool. Cool is important to people. Cool is really important to young people, and they're buying these devices like they're going out of style. What happens with the Android devices is there's two different types of people out there, in my opinion, that I see. There are people who just want to get a device, use a device, and be cool at the same time. And then you've got people who are like us, who are dweebs and nerds and stuff like that, and they're buying the Android device because I want a device that looks cool, but I want to be able to manipulate it. I want to change it. I want to make it do this and do that. I want to take this operating system off and put this operating system on. Well, that number of people in relation to the world is much smaller than the bunch of people out there that say, hey, guess what? I want to be able to see a movie on my device or read something and just do it.
Now you are touching on why I was pounding on my dashboard as I listened to the podcast last week, because I heard you geeks talking about, in particular about Windows, that, you know, it wasn't this and it wasn't that. And my thought is, like, you talked about touching being the issue, like touching a screen or something like that. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue with the Windows system is it all looks the same. Justin and I, during the break, I was looking by Windows Phone and at the Windows 8 that he has there. There is so much that will be easy for me on Windows 8 because I've been using the Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. And Eddie, is what you're saying is now Windows is insisting that all the phones that come out look alike.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening, is that that paradigm, that graphical user interface, is now going to be the same, the way it is with Apple. By the way, that's the magic of Apple.
As much as Gary hates it and always talks about they're draconian and they're running the whole show and blah, 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 blah. You know something? If you don't do that, you don't get a consistent, clean product.
Yeah,
that's the reason why the Surface has a chance of surviving, because Microsoft will be looking at the hardware and the software together so that they know how the whole thing works together.
And in the past, they were quite the other way around, I think. They were at the mercy of all the bloatware. Remember CCleaner? Remember when CCleaner came out? It was called crapware.
Yes.
And it was called crap cleaner. Pardon me, folks, it's a little crude. But that's what CCleaner meant when it came out. And you would just put this software on your computer, and it would go, and it would flush that all out.
Well, I mean, look at it. If you went out and take any machine you want to buy, don't matter who the manufacturer is, get it from the store, wipe it clean, take Microsoft 7 or Windows
whatever
7 or whatever operating system, and drop it on that machine and load it, and my God, it seems to run pretty darn good.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I have a question I'm going to ask. I don't know if we'll get to it right now, but let me pose the question for all of you guys here. It seems to me we're seeing this incredible shift, not just that the Microsoft is taking this huge step across a big, big gap here with the new operating system, but we seem to be moving into a whole new, they're calling it a post-PC era, that actually we're moving to smaller devices, more mobile kind of devices. I want to see if that's, Jason, are you seeing that, for instance, and you're consulting? We'll talk a little about that. And where, guys, do you think that's taking us in the next years? As people are thinking now, I got an older device, so what do I buy the next time around? We have people asking us that question all the time. We'll come back to discuss that in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. Our guest in studio from Apex Digital, of course, are Jason Lambiris and Justin Coffey, along with Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. And yours truly, Foster Brown, back in just a moment. Hi, Foster Brown. Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and a couple of guests in studio have been helping us to take a look at some of the brand new products and operating systems that have come out just recently. Jason Lambiris is the founder and CEO of Apex Digital, a company that helps businesses, small and medium-sized businesses, with their operating system, their IT, generally speaking. And Justin Coffey, one of the technical solution professionals from that. Guys, thanks so much for being with us. I threw a general question out. Let me throw it out again. There's been a lot of talk about us being in the post-PC era. And Jason, you and Justin are involved in advising businesses on things like this. Cal and Ed, what do you think is, a lot of talk about us being in a post-PC world. What does that mean? Like with these devices that are coming out right now, what are we looking forward to as people are thinking of maybe their next machine to buy, Eddie? What do you think?
They're looking at ultralight, and they're looking at getting away from carrying those huge laptop bags is what they're looking at. They want to get rid of that because when they know when they have a laptop bag, they're going to carry that. They're going to carry their lunch in there, a couple notebooks, power cords, maybe an extra bed. It's, you know, they're getting tired
of carrying those
yes, things.
Yes,
and they want something that they can carry and slip it into a man purse or a real purse.
It's Cal has got one of those bread slicers over
there. And he has a man purse.
That's a MacBook Air, which, by the way, I was carrying with me as I traveled. That's really nice.
It's tasteful without being gaudy. But at any rate, I think for really creative, really... there's going to be a niche for a desktop all the time. And I think the deciding factor is always going to be how much screen do I need to use.
Okay.
Because I got to tell you, when it comes to video editing, which is something I do part-time, I would never want to do that on a laptop. Only in a pinch, if I was out in the field, would I do that type of situation.
I agree with you.
But, you know, when you have palettes and you're a graphic artist and stuff like that, you can't have too big of a screen.
Now, I do audio editing, and I could do that. Matter of fact, I did do that as we were traveling this weekend on a smaller device.
That sort of thing. You can do it, but if you know someone who does Photoshop full, or if you know someone who does Illustrator full, you got palettes and stuff like that, you just need big screen.
Right.
And maybe even a couple of screens.
And you're always going to get more power in the larger boxes because of heat.
Yeah.
And these devices are don't run as fast as those heat mongers that we call desktops.
Not if you want to fry laptop. I mean, and not the computer. I'm talking about your lap itself. You know, they'll just get too hot to be able to do that sort of thing.
All right, Jason, you're talking to businesses about what's going on in the future and how to manage their stuff. What do you think?
I think the slates or the tablets are definitely going to replace laptops without a doubt. You know, we're starting to see that trend already. We were kind of discussing earlier, you know, one of the trends that we're seeing or one of the predictions that's being made is, you know, the mobile apps, as an example, are they predict mobile apps are going to, by 2015, are going to outnumber, from a development perspective, the projects will outnumber desktop applications 4-to-1.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, 4-to-1. That fascinates me. So we're actually, and this is kind of what, Gary has a friend named Mike Amon, and I must have been almost a year ago, he was in our studios here, and at that time, he talked about the appification, making up a word, of computers, that we were going to go to a place where we're no longer, like all of us geeks like to do, climbing around those trees, you know,
right.
Looking into, you know, behind the scenes into the Explorer, but that it was going to be a matter of select kinds of apps that you want.
And that almost reminds me of the old DOS days where you had a special application and the entire application was pretty much based, was self-contained, and you ran it from DOS, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're sort of having that with the, if you will, the appification of these of Windows 8 and these tablets, where it would be a self-contained little application that does very specific tasks.
You know? Go ahead, Justin.
I think one of the big things, and it's really kind of, you can see where the transformation's happening from laptop to tablet, like Jason was saying, is the Windows Surface, where I'm sure you guys have seen the picture, but basically it's just a tablet, and you snap your keyboard onto it.
Yes,
you still have the functionality of a laptop, but you can see the evolution of where it's going, where you can take the keyboard off, and you have just a tablet.
But basically you're working with a 10-inch screen, right?
Exactly.
Which goes to kind of what Cal's point was, that if you're going to be working in some, like, a huge photo application or a video editing, you're going where you want more screen space, it's different. But on a smaller scale, it's going to have all of the desktop guts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that they're doing now in a lot of conference rooms is you can have wireless or network-based video transmissions. So if you go into a conference room, you then your laptop or your pad, your touch device, your tablet, can then give the presentation to the projection device. And you will start seeing stuff like that at home where you'll have high-resolution HDMI, you know, LCD TVs or plasma TVs that have that capability integrated with them in them. And your tablet device will just connect to it.
Well, I mean, even with these, you know, devices, you know, beyond the snap and keyboard, getting back to that full screen, the one that I have in my hand, I can dock this, pretty inexpensive dock that I can pick up, and I can actually go out to dual 24-inch screens on it.
Yep.
So it's that still that full PC experience if I need it.
It's interesting. My daughter, when I first got my Mac, with a 13-inch MacBook Pro, she said, "Dad, get another monitor, like a 21, 22, 23-inch monitor." And she said, "Put your Mac on the side. And put your calendar and your mail applications there, and then do everything else in front of you in the big screen." That's how I've been working for the last, like, 3 years. It's wonderful.
You know, another way you can work, too, as well, and it's going on that same lines, and you already have it on the Mac, with the newer Macs with AirPlay. You can actually stream your screen to your big screen TV at home, and my God, that's a lot of space to work with.
That's the term I was thinking of.
When I get the $85, I've got a refurb Apple TV that I want to buy to do exactly that. Does Microsoft has something like that going with Xbox, doesn't it? In the way that they're tying a lot of these products together to work wirelessly with one another, or in that kind of seamless way?
Yeah, I mean, one of the new technologies that's coming around is Kinect, that's already existing, but Microsoft...
That works with the Xbox.
Yeah, and it's Microsoft spending a lot of time and energy on the Kinect and really kind of, transforming it to be kind of more of that takeover, where it's not even just the wireless sense, but it sees what you're doing. It's not even the fact that you're wireless anymore, that you don't even have to touch anything anymore. It's your body movements is what's really controlling the device and the technology. So that's even moving it a step forward.
So if I just wiggle a little bit, it'll shoot me a can of beer out of the fridge.
I wouldn't do that much.
That reminded me of what Bill Gates says, where your refrigerator's talking to your laptop, which is talking to your
stove. Yeah, he did say
stove,
that, didn't he?
Yeah. Beer, no.
You can tell this is a guy's program. Okay, sorry about that.
Well, we can do a glass of white Zen. It's fine.
do you came up with the statistics before, Jason. I don't know if you can get it in terms of the number of mobile devices that there are now or projected for 2015. It absolutely blew my mind when I heard that. I don't know if you... we were talking about it during a break, and I don't know if you can come up to that. But have you got it there?
Yeah, I've got it in front of me here. So essentially, it was really kind of a study that was done on the number of mobile devices and what the projections are in the years to come. But this year was a year that the number of mobile devices exceeded the world's population, and they're expecting or anticipating by 2016 there will be 1.4 mobile devices per person worldwide.
Wow.
So when you're born, they'll just hand you a phone and say, here you go.
I just hope they don't embed it.
Well, you know, there was something else you said where the number of devices is increased. They're no longer looked at as a luxury device.
Yeah, so there.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, it was kind of another similar study that was done, kind of breaking things down by income, and then by age groups. And really, if you look at the percentage of adoption, so to speak, by younger generations, regardless of income, it's very apparent that these kind of devices, whether it's a smartphone, a tablet, whatever the case may be, are looked at as a necessity, not a luxury.
And it's really weird, you know. And I started to notice that even more myself because I'm sitting there going, like, here's this kid in junior high school with a $600 iPhone, and I'm going like, there's no way in the world when I was in junior high school I'd have
my
anything
car.
That even come to
my
be
car might have been worth that much. Might have been worth that much.
Well, what's scary is right now a lot of my friends are, you know, starting their education career, so teachers,
yeah, right.
And every single one of them is, you know, posting on Facebook or social media, I'm so excited tomorrow, you know, my math class or my science class, where, you know, giving iPads out to all the students, and they're using iPads to teach students. And as we were talking earlier, iPads aren't cheap.
No.
But that's what they're going to be used to, and that's going to be, you know, their educational device.
Yep.
But what a wonderful thing, though, because now that backpack doesn't have to be like 300 pounds.
Right.
You know, it'll be, hopefully they'll take care of it when it's in there, though.
Kendall, just quickly before we go to the break, I saw Tim Cook in a report this week talking about the percentage of business in China that is Apple's being like 25% of the Chinese market. Am I right?
I saw something like that, but they're tied up about 20. They were saying they were tied up with a high percentage of the electronic business in that country.
Jason, I'm curious, just in terms of businesses, how big is the international factor in this whole thing? In other words, there are huge markets out there that haven't even been cracked. Think of the billions of people that are in China, India, and Brazil. Those three nations alone. How will that affect, do you think, the rest of this? I'll let you think. I'll let you chew on that. Because I have a feeling that while we talk about what's important to us here in the quote-unquote developed nations, that very soon, when we get down to 2015 that you were talking about, Jim, we're going to find the international market is going to start dictating back to us the devices, the operating systems, and a lot of other things about computers. Back to discuss more of that as we wrap things up here on the Internet Advisor. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. All of those who have downloaded the podcast, thank you very much for joining us. And for those of you who are at our affiliate stations throughout the Michigan Talk Radio Network, thanks so much to the folks who listen to us in Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, and Muskegon on the stations there. And by the way, if you would like to have a question you'd like us to answer, you folks out there who are listening to us on our affiliates or download our podcast and say, you know, I got something going on with my computer I'd like to get some help with, boom, there's a couple things you can do. You can go to the Contact Us button on our toolbar and just click on that, put your name and information in there, send your request to us, and we'll get right to it during the week. And then when we're recording our programs, we also take some of those emails and we read, maybe sometimes call people back and try to solve a problem with them on the air there. The other thing is we have our forums that are open that you can get to immediately, and there's a whole bunch of people who will jump on the bandwagon to help you out. But again, please don't feel like you're cut out of the conversation, because that email Contact Us form is there precisely to bring you into the conversation. I'd like to thank Annie Nichols and Rich Lazinski, the folks who are behind the glass helping us there as well to make the program run smoothly. And then for all the other folks out there who are part of our program, thank you very much. Particularly today, I want to thank our guests who have been in studio with us, and that's Jason Lambiris and Justin Coffey, both from Apex Digital. And, of course, Eddie and Cal, good to have you guys.
And they've really excited me about, got me really excited about the Windows 8. I really am. Because
they're
telling me these features that I just did not know existed.
See, I have been so bugged this week by a lot of the negative stuff, and even Rick Broida last week. Rick, I love you. I love you dearly. But hearing him talk about, I used it for a week or so, I think he said, maybe a little longer than that. And he said, I just didn't like it because I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And I thought, you know, that's somebody with a tech background saying, I couldn't do all the things I was used to doing behind the scenes with Microsoft Explorer and things like that. And my point is, but it's not built for that. It's built for the masses of people who are now going to use and who only want a limited number of choices, like my wife, who wants two, email and Facebook, and maybe pictures. And don't confuse her with any more.
Now, see, here's the deal, that at least in my opinion. It's not Rick's being tech. It's not, you know, someone being this and that. It's all about just one basic human nature. It's change. And so now you have to do something different. Yeah. And I think that bottom line, if you decide that you want to try this new operating system, if you go in it without a preconceived notion about what the past was all about and not the preconceived notion of what other people have said about it, yeah, and just look at it for yourself,
yes,
evaluate it, and then feel the real trueness of whether it's for you or not,
right,
for you, you got a better chance of enjoying that
I
experience.
Think you're absolutely right. By the way, folks, on our homepage, InternetAdvisor.net, I included an article that came out of CNET, a review by one of their senior editors, Eric Franklin. And I thought it was an excellent one of Windows 8. If you go to that site, there's a video that he has in there. And he did one of the fairest assessments of it. He talked about what he liked about it and what its shortcomings were. And I thought he was very fair in what he did. And the bottom line was, he had the attitude you did, I think, Cal, that he went in and said, let's see what this is about. And it wasn't so much it isn't what this used to be or what that used to be, but he looked at the potential for what it could be. And I think, folks, if you approach it with that, I tell you, there is a learning curve. And Jason, you mentioned it. Justin, you mentioned it. I can tell you, with my Windows Phone, it has taken me close to a month to really get used to the tile metaphor.
Yep.
Now that I'm there, I love it, and I see that I won't have the learning curve when I get the Windows 8.
Well, you know, I could tell you got used to that phone because I no longer get butt dials.
It's much harder to do with the Nokia.
Well, because Jason and Jeff are in the industry, let me ask you a dumb question that I never thought about before. Can you buy Windows 8, use it, and then decide you don't like it and return it?
That's a good question.
I mean, like 30 days.
Wow, I've never thought about that.
Because, you know, hey, I'm going to go out and say, I want a new operating system. I buy an operating system, and I find out, I don't really like it.
That's a good question. No,
well, you know, I guess if I bought it from Best Buy, I could.
Okay.
But they don't usually let you return software.
That's been opened.
That's been opened. But nowadays,
software
is packaged.
Or do they give you a chance to download it as a trial from the Microsoft website and try it?
I know they definitely allow you to try it, like in the Office Suite and some
yes,
of the other products.
The Office
trials.
Suites, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I haven't taken a look, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do start.
Well, they up to this point, by the way, Cal, this has been going on for over 6 months, hasn't it, with the previews that are out there? And, Ed, you were asking about that. I don't know if it was on the air or during a break. Is there a place where I can download the preview version of
yes.
Windows 8?
But normally the previews are for the geek world like us. I'm talking about once it's out and it's in the wild, and, you know, I think I'll try Windows 8 now. And
that you're so disappointed you actually want a refund, basically.
Yeah.
I wonder, for
a seriously person that would want to take it back.
I think you can go. You have often said this, Cal. Go to a store. Go to a Micro Center. Go to
stand in front of a machine, actually touch it, feel it, see what it's all about, decide if it's something that you like.
This you may have to take a little more time with, I think, to be really fair, I think. Don't you think so, Jason?
I think a little bit of time, but I think it's trying it out on the right devices. And I think
that's a good point.
I think a lot of the naysayers out there, you know, for once, Microsoft, I'll say, is a little early on getting it out. The devices just haven't caught up, and we're just now starting to see where... Not just slates, but they even have laptops that are coming out that have touchscreens on them now. There's quite a few of those coming out.
See, I don't think it's... Do you think it's that much of an issue of touchscreens? Because, you know, Justin, you're using a laptop there, and you're using it with the touchpad that's on the laptop. Or, no, pardon me, you have a mouse over there.
Exactly, yep, with a mouse.
That's interesting. You're using the mouse.
Yeah, like
and
I
you're
said
not
earlier,
using the touchpad.
I have no touch-enabled functionality on this, but I'm using Windows 8 in the same way that you would use it with your fingers or whatever you're doing, and it's still an awesome OS.
Now, the major difference, I understand, is if you use your fingers on a touchscreen, you use the sides, up, the top side, bottom side, and left and right. If you're using a mouse, what do you do then?
Same thing.
The sides or corners?
The corners, yeah.
Corners. With the mouse, it's the corners, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Now,
it has the same effect.
Go now, for me, in my opinion, Windows 8 touchscreen interface on a tablet, yes. Touchscreen interface on a Laptop? Any other in a laptop? No.
Optional. Well, it's optional. I mean, there might be a point where I want.
Not because it's not because whether I want to or not, but ergonomically, yeah. It feels uncomfortable to do it on a laptop screen or on a desktop screen.
What do we do with our Mac devices nowadays when we don't want to use a mouse, Cal, and we don't want to use the trackpad on the machine?
Is that a trick question? You like turn them off?
Well,
don't
I mean, you could use the keyboard
or the trackpad.
Oh yeah, I always use the trackpad.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. We don't need to have touch screens, folks. We just use like a trackpad or something like that, and we don't have to use a mouse. My point is, we already are interacting with devices without mice.
Right. Well, if I can interject, it actually does work that way because I've got Windows 8 loaded on one of my MacBook Airs running under Parallels,
mm-hmm.
and the touchpad actually does. Windows 8 responds with the swipe
with the devices
and, with
oh,
the devices
wonderful.
Swipe back and forth, pinch and zoom, and all of those features.
Oh man, that's even better than good. Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah. See, Cal, then we get all the value of that, all the gestures that are in Monoline,
well,
for instance.
As long as it's on a horizontal surface, the touch features are great.
Yes.
When they go vertical, it's ergonomically crazy for me. You know, I see carpal tunnel running like crazy.
Yeah, but I still see a lot of manufacturers that have been building traditional laptops for 20 years, and they're going to want to experiment with putting touchscreens on the laptops to see what the consumers will like, and then go from there, either with detachable keyboards like they are with the Surface, or maybe with permanently affixed ones, but full back. I think they're going to experiment and see what the consumers buy.
But I think it's unfair to Windows 8 to say that it's got to be a touch experience. Because it doesn't. That's not what it's about.
No.
But life is
Jason,
going.
You were going to say something?
That's because life is going to the touch direction. And
yes.
And that's the reason why everyone's talking that way.
Good.
I think it's going to the touch direction, and I would argue that the experience is enhanced with touch on Windows 8. But we talked about we talked about things like Kinect earlier, and that's where you're going to start to see Kinect for PC really take shape, and it's going to go from touch to gestures.
Yes. Right. And at one point, Cal, I don't know if it was last week I heard you saying this or I heard another blog they were talking about, or a podcast, that actually the camera on the device looks at your eyes and watches your eye movement and then will make decisions on opening things based on your eye movement. That I find a little scary. Folks, it's been great having you in studio. I hope you've heard that we kind of touched on like a brave new world, and I hope, like Ed, you'll be intrigued to check out Windows 8 and see what this is all about. Check out the new Mini, the iPad Mini. Go to an Apple store and have some fun playing with it there. There is a whole new world of computing that's out there, and I think it's going to be a very exciting one for more and more people. Again, thanks to you, Jason and Justin, for being in here from Apex. Always glad to have you in, and thank you so much for your help. And Ed and Cal, good to have you with us here as well. We'll be back again in a week with more good stuff for you on the Internet Advisor. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998, we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help you. So don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.